What goes on in here? 6:53, almost 6:54 now, and coming up after 7 on the Steve Cochran Show, Steve Scalise at 7:20, the Republican whip who can talk about any number of things related to Congress, their fine work that they're doing. And what happens tonight with the State of the Union? We're going to preview that, amongst other things. I'm just giddy to be at work.
We're glad you're here. We worried about you.
We were actually calculating, John DeCosta's with me, we were actually calculating where we could have driven as opposed to the city and the amount of time it took to get to the city this morning.
And where could you have driven?
I just looked it up.
Almost to Indy.
Almost to Indy, Iowa. Mm-hmm. We could have been in Iowa.
Well north of Milwaukee. Well, probably Kohler.
Oh, yeah. Go to the spa.
If it were on a plane, Denver.
Oh, easily Denver. Yeah.
Could have been
Miami.
Anywhere warmer.
Miami.
Could have been in Miami.
New York, maybe.
Yeah. New York.
I walked out of the Naperville summer house at 4:29. We walked into the studio 5 minutes ago.
Steve, a listener has a suspicion that this whole traffic thing is just a big lie and you were actually snuggling with Abigail all morning and didn't want to get out of bed.
Yeah. I wish that were the case. Yeah, because as you know, my granddaughter likes me best. Governor Rauner later, Coach Q, Dean Richards, Stump the Millennials later, and we're going to talk to the Powerball today, which I got to give Kevin credit. I don't know how you book the Powerball, but we're interviewing the Powerball.
Huge interview.
It was tough, but we made it happen.
Dave, you were talking about the national championship last night. Mm-hmm. I stuck with it to a 24-24 tie, and then apparently all hell broke loose in the last 10 minutes.
Pretty much.
37 points or something in the last
it was
10 minutes?
So it's 24 all. Alabama kicks a field goal to tie it.
Yeah.
That's
when I bailed
off. All right. The ensuing kickoff was an onside kick recovered by Alabama. First play, Derrick Henry, the Heisman winner, gets dropped behind the line for a loss. Next play, 51-yard touchdown pass.
Did either defense show up?
Evidently not. I mean, you had the number 2 total defense in the nation.
Alabama.
And the number 11 with Clemson. And they combined for 1,020-some yards, I believe.
And the Clemson quarterback is who?
Deshaun Watson.
Is he pro-ready?
I don't know that. I mean, I'm not sure where he fits in.
How much of a runner is he? Is he more of a runner?
Well, he really passed the ball well last night.
And that's 400 yards or something.
He's a great runner, though. He's so quick. I mean, he's a really good dual-threat quarterback.
He looked good in a Bears uniform. Oh, you don't think he'll drop to 11 or whatever the Bears pick is?
I'm not sure that that's going to happen.
And is he a senior?
Watson, I don't believe he's a senior. I think he's back next year.
Wow.
Unless he chooses to come back.
Well, fine year by Clemson. However, their coach has a high blood pressure problem and may actually explode next time he's on the sideline. What's his name? Dabo Sweeney. Yeah. Temperamental little guy, isn't he?
And he's really emotional. And the players love him. I mean, he's really one of those guys, I think, that really galvanizes a team around him. But
he's going to drop dead of a heart attack on the sideline sometime.
He's pretty type A.
Yeah, in a big way. He's like the dad watching a game that freaks out and then has to be removed by security.
Exactly.
So, Powerball, the number is at last glance was
$1.5 billion.
All right, so let's say I take the lump sum. What am I getting? Is it 800, 850?
It's something. I thought it was like 870.
That's not bad.
That's really good.
That's not bad. Now, do I have to take that like in monthlies?
No, you can do a lump sum.
So they'll give you one check?
One check, or I think they have something now where you can do yearly.
Could I do it in gift cards?
No, I think you would need to do it yearly as well. But there was a channel.
What if I die? What if I'm Dabo Sweeney and I lose it on the sideline?
Make sure you specify who you want the money to go to.
Okay.
You look good, by the way.
Yeah, right go
now.
To you
We're
guys.
Glad you're here.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Really good. Channel 9 did something this morning. They said, but the math was fuzzy, Kevin told me. So if you took $1.5 billion, what the Powerball is worth, and divided it up among the population of the United States of America, every resident of the United States would get $4 million. Which I'm fine with.
No, $4.
No, it was like four. It was a crazy number.
$330 million, $1.5 billion, $4.
This was a meme that went viral yesterday and was retweeted hundreds.
It's like
$4
and 40. It's like $4.40.
Right, and then someone said, "Everybody, hold on, that the math isn't right in that meme."
So the meme said $300 million.
Right. Yeah, right. The meme said it.
All right. Everybody in America, let's say there's 330 million people, $1.5 billion, $4.40, $4.50. I'm like, well, it's not bad. It's $4.50 more than you had before.
Forget it. I don't want it anymore. Yeah.
The other posting that was making the rounds this weekend was how much it would cost to buy every combination, every possible.
Oh, to guarantee yourself a win?
Guarantee yourself a win. And it was like $500 million, I believe, to buy every possible combination.
Well, why not do it then? You're going to make $1 billion.
Unless someone else has the same combination and you have to split it. And then if you're in a state where your lottery winnings are taxed, then you could end up losing money on the deal.
Well, thank you, Negative Nelly. Maybe I'd like to spend my $500 million and roll the dice.
Sorry, I didn't mean to burst your balloon there.
Kevin, I was going to send you to the nearest gas station to pick up $500 million in lottery tickets. I'd like to be in line behind that guy. I'd like $500 million in scratch-offs and $500 million in regular Powerball tickets.
I'll go for you. Yeah. Whatever you need. There's a 700.
We're going to have to open another line.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our
kind of an unexpected winter blast last night. It was supposed to be fluffy snow. Fluffy snow. Maybe an inch, maybe a little more of fluffy snow. Well, fluffy snow has made side streets really difficult in a lot of ways this morning. You get to the highways. The highways are generally okay unless you've got a jackknife tractor trailer in front of you on the Eisenhower at Austin, which causes you to lose 2 hours of your life you'll never see again and miss your own show. But that's just me. But if you're just cranking it up and getting out of the house this morning, it's going to take you longer because I would say, Mary, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the biggest mess we've had all winter.
Yeah, so far in the morning, for sure.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of afternoon messes, but this has probably been the worst morning one that I can remember in a while. That ice storm we had, though, a couple weeks ago, but we were off, so, you know, the one right after Christmas.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, right? I mean,
nobody was working then anyway, right. So worked out okay.
So it is what it is till it isn't, and what it is today is a mess. So wish I had better news for you.
Yeah,
but it's going to take you longer to get there from here. So let's say you've got a meeting this morning at 9 and you're 15 minutes from work. You have no shot of making it.
That is true. You know, you say that tongue in cheek, but. Yeah, the side streets are bad. Main street's fine, except where you were.
Well, you live in the city.
Yes.
You're 15 minutes
away from
the Tribune Tower.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to get to work?
About 17 minutes. Well, no, because it took a little longer. I had to negotiate through two side streets, which I just try and plow through. Because the truck went over them once, perhaps. And then once I was on the main street, I was fine. Lakeshore Drive was fine.
Yeah, in the burbs, it's getting to the highway that will continue to be the problem. And I don't know that parking lots and stuff got plowed well as well. You know, there's always somebody that gets to work early so they can sit by a window and watch you fall on the way to work. Because, I mean, let's be honest, it's entertaining.
There's actually
as long as nobody gets hurt.
There's a patch of ice right in front of the Showcase Studio.
It's kind
of in your blind spot. And we want... You know, we always tell the guards, and they put salt out there, too. It's just this one area.
It's by
Dave Ennett's plaque on the Walk of Fame.
It's sort of like Dave Ennett's plaque on the Walk of Fame is sort of like, remember the Devil's Triangle where planes would disappear?
Bermuda Triangle.
This is, same thing. Yeah. This is where people fall, Dave. I don't know what it is.
And I'm the only one actually looking straight at it.
Well, you want to, this is soundproof glass. But you want to run out there and go, don't walk there.
We should put candles on Dave's plaque on the Walk of Fame.
Oh, it'll look like he passed away.
Yeah, it will. It'll look like he died.
Got a memorial going.
Forget that.
I'd rather
I just meant
not.
To light a pathway, not to symbolize as though you've passed.
How about giant orange construction cones just around
yeah,
it?
Yeah, just some sort of alert would be nice. Right. A little
How about Dave stands out there and just it helps everybody.
Directs traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
all morning.
Bad. At 7:14, just a quick thank you. John DeCosta, first time John's been in the new year because, you know, he hasn't been sober, I'll be honest with you.
Happy New Year.
And John, say hi to Mary.
Happy New Year, Mary.
You haven't met Steve yet. Steve Grzanich, John DeCosta. Go ahead, turn your mic on, Steve. Say hello.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year to you.
Best, all the best to you as well.
And the reason I wanted John to say a quick hello here is because after doing the two New Year's Eve shows, which we had a great time at, and thanks to everybody that came out, we had one complaint.
One complaint?
Yeah, we had one complaint, and John returned the complaint call, and the woman was flabbergasted that she got a phone call. And it turns out she's not a fan, and she listens to a radio station in Rockford. She's from southern Wisconsin, is that right?
Richmond.
Oh, Richmond, okay.
Yeah, Illinois.
Hmm. But by the time it was over, she and John are now dating.
No.
Yeah, they're spending some quality time together.
What was the complaint?
But is she listening? Is she a fan now?
Yeah, well, I'm sure she is.
Yeah, all right.
What was her first name? Do you remember?
What was the complaint, John?
It was Carol, actually.
Carol.
The laughing lady?
No.
Oh, you were there for, yes.
Yeah. Wasn't her name Carol, too?
No, Carol's complaint was she was at the 3 o'clock show, and she thought the show was slapped together. Now, look, I can guarantee you a lot of things.
You mean the morning show or the comedy show?
This show slapped together,
okay.
Obviously.
Okay.
No, the 3 o'clock show, the comedy show, was slapped together. Uh-huh. And and it just goes to show you that we are committed to customer service. So John called her and talked to her. And, well, she likes John.
Yeah, my wife, Jackie, is a little upset that we're going to.
You had a good run. It's time that you moved on from Jackie to your new friend,
Carol. It
was
30 years. I think it was time.
Don't you want to get to know Carol first? I mean, all you know is that she complained and you had one phone call with her.
Yeah, but it was a moment. It was a moment.
Yeah, and I don't like, you know, listen, I don't ask for much for the people that work with me, but I asked John to commit to making this complaint. It's one complaint.
Right.
We had what do we have? 1,500 people?
Yeah,
1,200 people?
Ridiculous.
That's
1,200
odds.
People. We had one complaint, and the complaint was frankly, you know, I don't know what the complaint, where the complaint came from, because we had one. But I asked John to commit to the cure for this person because I want people to be happy. And John and Carol will be married in a small ceremony outside of Richmond.
Everybody's invited.
Everybody's
I want
invited.
Everybody to know that. Dave, you're going to do updates.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good.
You know, I always respond to people when they complain. I always, you know,
how much time must that take? Come on, Steve, you're in show business.
I do. And whether it's on Twitter or whatever, and they're always flabbergasted too. And, you know, sometimes
it's the right thing to do.
They turn into stalkers, but other than that, they're fine, you know?
No, it's the right thing to do.
They appreciate it. It's customer service.
So what's it? Customer service is what it is. That's exactly right.
And they usually never complain again.
All right, we have to take a break for traffic here, and then we'll come back. And Steve Scalise, wow, should have brought the old tongue to work. The majority whip in the House will join us in just a second. We'll explain what majority whip is, too, for those of you who haven't been paying attention. In a moment, but first, Mary, what are the cars doing? All right, 7:18 in the morning, and welcome to Steve Scalise, at Steve Scalise, all over social media. S-C-A-L-I-S-E is the last name. And Congressman Scalise joins us now, the House Majority Whip. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Morning. Great to be with you.
Thanks for being on. I appreciate it. Congratulations on a promotion to House Majority Whip. Let's explain what House Majority Whip is and what the historical generation of the term is. You don't actually have a whip, do you, Steve?
I've been given one. I don't have to use it. Of course, if you watch House of Cards, you know, you could probably think a whole lot of other things about the whip.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Not quite the same as it was when it was originally originated.
But the idea is that you are able to count votes, but mostly generate votes and help push the agenda of the speaker and of the party. That's your gig, right? That's your deal.
Right. My job as Majority Whip is to make sure that when we bring bills to the floor, the Republican leadership, you know, works with our members to establish what we want to do on the House floor. And then we bring bills, and those bills that are our priorities, my job is to make sure we have 218 votes to pass them. And it means working with our members, find out if there's amendments that need to address certain issues or other things that we can tackle. But it means you constantly are talking with the other members of our House Republican majority to move our agenda forward.
And you know what a punchline the House majority had become. What is your level of optimism now with Speaker Ryan being in charge?
Yeah, I really like where we are. And, you know, look, Paul Ryan's the best ideas guy in the Republican Party. I think when he was the vice presidential nominee 4 years ago. A lot of people want him to run for president this time because he's so good at articulating our message, really laying out the bold vision for what conservatism means, and he's good at explaining it to people kind of in a Reagan-esque way where if you don't even follow politics, you can really understand how it'll help improve your daily lives. And that's what we've been hungry for. I think that's what the country's hungry for right now.
The Congress has been notoriously unable to get anything done. And, Andrea, as you know, Scalise and Company got a spending bill done that, frankly, surprised a lot of people. You probably didn't get enough credit for it because it came during the holiday season, and it came at a time where more people weren't paying attention as they normally would be to all the political news that's out there. But how does a Congress that just points fingers at each other and doesn't get anything done get the spending bill done? What was different about this time?
Well, and like you said, we've been getting some big things done, especially towards the end of last year that weren't getting a lot of attention. We got a big highway bill done, which is important for infrastructure all around the country. It's not partisan. Republicans and Democrats supported it. We were able to actually get some certainty in the tax code. Look, our tax code seemed like every few months you'd have portions of the tax code expiring, which creates a lot of uncertainty for families, for small businesses. We really got some good things done there to put certainty in the tax code. We need to do a lot more. But on the spending side, we were able to actually pass a bill through that reprioritizes national defense at a time when you're seeing ISIS wants to come into America and carry out terrorist attacks. They were successful, it looks like, in San Bernardino, and yet our defense had been eviscerated over the years. So we were able to reprioritize a stronger national defense and do some things, including we actually cut spending and staffing at the EPA, probably the agency that's killing more jobs in America than anywhere else with the president's policies. And we were able to actually straighten that out and bring spending down to the lowest levels they were before President Obama took office. So we're trying to get spending under control while we're also trying to prioritize things like stronger national defense.
Congressman, speaking of prioritizing, Republicans, I know, don't have enough votes to override the president's veto of legislation repealing the health care law, but yet there's a repeal vote scheduled in the House for the 26th. Is that just a waste of time?
No, I think it's really important for people all across the country to see. I mean, I'll tell you this. Whether it's Southeast Louisiana, the area I represent, or any of my colleagues, our colleagues from Illinois, they said the biggest complaint they hear from people when they go back home is all the rules and regulations coming out of Washington, out of the administration. But primarily, the health care law is probably the biggest offender in terms of killing jobs in America. So we passed a bill to gut Obamacare and to say, look, however you feel about abortion, I'm pro-life. But most people feel, even if they're pro-choice, that taxpayer funds shouldn't be going to fund abortion. And so we had a bill to defund Planned Parenthood. And we put that on the president's desk. He vetoed it last week. But we're going to have the override vote on the 26th of January, and it'll show people what's at stake in this presidential election, because you can do big things like that if you have the right president who actually believes that these laws, these policies are creating real problems across the country. We can fix them with the right leadership.
But to go back to the Obamacare piece for a second, when you and I were growing up, Congressman, if you tried something 50 or 60 times and it didn't work out, even your mom, who loved you more than anybody, would say, maybe this isn't right for you. I get the politics end of it. I get it's an election year. I get all of that. But this does feel like a colossal waste of time. And the frustrating thing for me is, and this goes back to when Mitt Romney was running, and I think really torpedoed a pretty good campaign in a lot of ways by his own mistakes, including repeal Obamacare and replace it with what? Has anybody come up with a legitimate idea, if the Republicans were to succeed, to say, here's our plan? Because otherwise it's just whining.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's what Speaker Ryan said we're going to be doing this year is laying out those big, bold visions, including a true replacement of Obamacare. But to finish the thought on the bill we put on the president's desk, keep in mind, this is the very first time that a bill has been placed on Barack Obama's desk that guts Obamacare. All the votes that have passed in the House over the last few years haven't gone anywhere in the United States Senate. So most of them weren't even debated in the Senate. Finally, we got the Senate to take up a bill and use a tool called reconciliation to get the bill to the president's desk. So that's significant. Look, welfare reform took three times after Bill Clinton vetoed it the first two before it got signed into law. And you want to talk about probably the greatest transformation to help get people out of poverty was the welfare reform legislation in the 1990s. And that happened only because they were persistent. So if they would have given up after the first two vetoes, they would have never gotten it, and they would have never gotten millions of people out of poverty and help grow the middle class. So I don't think the fact that we've only had one veto, it shows the country what's at stake in these elections.
Right, but you know, you are splitting hairs a little bit because outside the Beltway, people don't see it as that. People who go really 50-plus times are all putting it in the same basket.
Right, but only one actually got to the president's desk. And at the end of the day, getting bills to the president's desk, hopefully that he signs, but at least that get to his desk, that's the hardest part of getting legislation moved through the process. When we talk about a replacement for Obamacare, many of the things that we've laid out, and we've passed some individual bills, but if we move a large replacement bill, it's going to include a lot of the items that are not only our members have come to coalesce around, but people all around the country. Things like allowing people to buy across state lines, allowing people to make their own health care decisions, not right. unelected bureaucrats in Washington, getting rid of these taxes and mandates that are actually costing jobs. There are a lot of good employers that provided good health care. Millions of people have lost the good health care they had under Obamacare. Let's reverse that. Let's let people make their choices between them and their doctor, not Washington bureaucrats making health care choices.
The House Majority Whip is Steve Scalise, Congressman from Louisiana. Let's get back to, before we run out of time here, where everybody plays nice in the sandbox. You got the State of the Union address tonight. This could be very ceremonial. It's Obama's last time at the podium. But is there something tonight that he could say, realistically, that he could say that could move the agenda in Congress back towards that spirit of getting things done with the spending bill and the highway bill and the other things that were accomplished?
Yeah, sure. There are a number of things. Well, I'd start with national security. I mean, you look at right now, the biggest threat to our country is national security, the fact that you see ISIS moving all throughout the Middle East, but now they're moving to America. They went to Paris. They said they wanted to attack Western nations. They did it in Paris, and then they did it in San Bernardino. So they are here in America. They're not only recruiting Americans, and they've been very successful, unfortunately, at recruiting Americans, but they're expanding their foothold and now moving into the United States, carrying out terrorist attacks. The president has yet to lay out a strategy to defeat ISIS. We stand ready to work with him. I encourage the president to lay out a different strategy and say he wants to work with Congress to go and carry that out. We will strongly support an initiative that that involves members both of the House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, to go and defeat this major threat to our national security. I think the president would be well served to lay out that different vision tonight.
Congressman, also wanted to ask you real quick, too, about your thoughts on the president's executive action decision last week, and if the Congress is going to move forward with any sort of new gun control legislation in light of that.
No, look, the things the president laid out last week wouldn't do anything to reduce gun violence. I mean, you talk about the most recent gun violence. It was a terrorist attack carried out by ISIS on American soil. And instead of talking about defeating ISIS, the president wants to talk about making it harder for law-abiding citizens to buy guns. It's divisive. It doesn't do anything to solve crime. The president's actually had a double-digit reduction in going after people who break existing gun laws. Why doesn't the president go and actually enforce existing gun laws and put those people in jail instead of passing more regulations, many of which aren't even constitutional, he won't even be able to carry out? Congress isn't going to be trying to take away the rights of gun owners. Congress wants people to be able to exercise more individual freedom, and people that comply with the laws, those are the people we should be celebrating. We ought to be going after the people who break laws. This president's had over a 15% reduction in going after people who break gun laws just in the last 5 years.
But see, this is where you and I may differ, because you guys make the laws, in if we go with this idea of the way the country was constructed, you make them, he signs them, he's in charge of making sure they're enforced in the big picture. But as you know, when people walk on the streets in Illinois and Chicago and wherever in the country, it is a local and a state issue. It's not something the president goes, well, how come we didn't keep this guy in jail? I don't like executive orders, Congressman. I don't like executive orders, but every president does them. And the fact is, you guys in Congress haven't done anything. And every time this argument comes up, this argument ought to be about, well, what could help? Because you can have both. You can have better restrictions on having the wrong people get guns and still enforce the gun laws that are out there. They're not the same thing.
Look, Chicago's got serious gun violence. New Orleans, where I come from, has serious gun violence. It's not because of failed gun laws. It's because you've got to actually do regular police work. We had this problem back in the 1990s in New Orleans. They were the murder capital of the world. The mayor actually went and got a new police chief who was aggressive at actually rooting out crime. That's what got crime under control in New Orleans. It was going after the bad guys. It's not that complicated. What this president's done with his Justice Department, I'm not talking about local laws, when people are violating federal gun laws that are already on the books, that were signed into law by a president, this president's not done those things. So he thinks Executive action is not about rewriting law. Go read the Constitution. Everybody that took Civics 101 knows the president can't write law, and this president tries to act like he can write law. That's where there's been a disconnect. Go enforce existing laws. If there's a problem with existing laws, come work with Congress to change them. This president hasn't tried to do that.
Listen, I hope we can do this again. I appreciate you coming on, and I respect the fact that you've taken on a difficult job here. So get that whip out and keep working.
Will do. Great to be with you, and love visiting Chicago when I'm out there.
All right, thanks, man. Congressman Steve Scalise, again, at Steve, S-C-A-L-I-S-E. Look, the problem the Republican Party is going to continue to have is they talk to themselves. The Democrats do the same thing. And the middle gets bigger and bigger. And the middle are people who are just tired of it. And it's the reason Donald Trump has exploded the way he has. Not because Donald Trump is some dyed-in-the-wool Republican. It's because he says he hates everything in politics. That's why so many people have responded to him. Deep breath. But I like Congressman Scalise, and I think he and Paul Ryan have an opportunity to, possibly change the face of the Republican Party. But you can't keep talking to yourself, and you can't keep doing the same thing over and over again.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You ever been to a party where it's kind of awkward? Maybe you were a late invitee, and then you didn't get a gift?
Yeah, last minute, yeah, you forget.
Governor Rauner's anniversary today, 1 year in office. Did you get him anything?
I thought you were in charge
of
that.
Dave, did you get Governor Rauner anything for his anniversary?
No, but I could run out real quickly to Walgreens.
Could run over and see if they have like those paper flowers that you check out, the roses at the checkout thing.
Maybe a supersized bottle of Advil.
That's not a bad call. Betty needs that. Supersized Advil may be exactly the trick. Governor Rauner, happy anniversary.
Thank you. It's a special day.
Did anyone give you a present?
Well, Advil doesn't work on me yet. Aspirin's good. Aspirin would be good. I'm running low on that.
Yeah, we're going to get you a bottle of aspirin. We're just going to put Madigan's face right on the label. All right, let's talk about some good news first, because there is, frankly, a lot of good news in the last year. The school funding, at a time where everybody's talking about what's going to happen to Chicago schools and stuff, you guys were able to get some stuff done.
No, that's right. I'm very proud of the fact that despite no budget and some real disagreements on the direction of the state, we were able to increase state support for our public schools, and I pushed hard. We've got the highest state support ever in the history of Illinois. I'm very proud of that. Education's a big priority for us.
In addition to educational funding on day one, we were just talking about executive orders with Steve Scalise of Congress, but executive orders are something that executives in politics have to do. Executive action has to be taken at times when you're not getting cooperation from the legislature. You're able to freeze unnecessary funding last year. What is the state of unnecessary funding now? Has the audit officially been complete?
It's mostly done, although some parts are ongoing. We've been able to block a lot of wasteful spending. Another one of our biggest accomplishments I'm very proud of in the first year, despite no cooperation from the legislature, we've been able to cut more than $700 million out of the government operating costs annually right now, just from executive action and action from the leaders of the different state agencies we appointed. So I'm very proud of that.
And I don't know if you know this, Andrea, but the governor, there were a whole fleet of airplanes. The governor got rid of a bunch of them, and he rides mostly a divvy bike around the state now. It's a pocket full of change. He just takes one of the blue bikes.
We did sell a good chunk of the state air fleet, and we asked the legislators to stop just flying back and forth at the taxpayer expense. I actually love driving, and I drive. I mostly live here in Springfield where I am this morning. But I mostly drive when I go around the state. That's one of the things I love about the job, too. I love driving to visit the people of Illinois, and I'm on the road around the state most days of the week.
All right, let's do one more good news piece here, because I think this is important. And I asked you about this on the record the other day, and you stated unequivocally you're not here to break up unions. You actually have struck deals with unions in the past year again and again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's one of the other biggest accomplishments of the year. We've come to terms on very innovative new contracts with 17 different unions inside state government that are good for the employees, good for taxpayers. They've got merit pay. They've got more flexible compensation, new health care programs that save taxpayer money and that provide flexibility for employees. And for the most productive employees can make more money. Very proud of that. Very excited. you know, and this whole spin about me being anti-union or whatever, it's, again, as you pointed out, just not true. I do believe employees should be have the right to be flexible and join or not join. That's a basic right, I believe. But my biggest point is that I'm pushing hard in our negotiations with the legislature is some folks agree with me, free enterprise, flexibility, free choice. Others like more forced collectivization, higher taxes to pay higher wages for construction. I just want each community to be able to choose for themselves what model of government, what model of economy they want to pursue. They want the traditional model in Illinois, collectivism that Madigan pushes, or do we want to compete with Tennessee and Texas and Indiana for more jobs and lower taxes and get more flexibility? I just want each community to be able to choose for themselves. That's what I'm pushing.
Governor, like the story about the interview you did with the Chicago Sun-Times the other day, talking about many Democrats, specifically Democrats in Chicago, are saying, don't back down to you. So I wanted to ask about your relationship with Rahm Emanuel, and is it helping or hindering progress in Springfield when it comes to schools and infrastructure in the city?
Well, it's a great question. You know, unfortunately, I've become very, very disappointed in the mayor on multiple levels. I'm not going to talk this morning about these tragedies with the police shootings, but in terms of economic leadership and education leadership, the mayor so far has been very different in private discussions than he has been in public, and I'm disappointed by that. He's not fighting to get reforms for the state. He knows that the reforms I'm recommending could help the city of Chicago tremendously, and I have offered significant financial support for Chicago Public Schools. But so far, the mayor is not embracing our recommendations publicly, and privately he does, but not publicly, and he's not pushed the speaker, and he's allowed the speaker to block reform and be very intransigent. And I'm concerned. I am a big advocate for public schools. I want the best schools in America, and I've spent years of my life and many resources supporting better schools in Chicago. And if the mayor doesn't start to lead and get proactive to fight to get reforms for his schools in his city, he could end up in a place that he didn't want to be, because there are a lot of legislators who look at what Chicago already gets. And Chicago gets $600 million more money already now based upon how many students they have in poverty and how many total students they have. They have $600 million now more than other school districts around the state get on a per student basis. And if the mayor, all he does is say, no reforms, just put, governor, put in a massive tax hike and send me some of the cash. He's going to not end up with more money to help with his pensions for teachers. He's going to end up net with less money than he's got right now, and he's not going to like that position.
Yeah, and here's the ultimate push here that's gone on, and this, of course, takes us to my favorite topic. And let me check in with Kevin here, Governor, if I could. Kevin, when is Mike Madigan going to join us? All right, we're still getting crickets on that? Okay, all right, fine. Governor, I appreciate your access and you coming on to address this audience. It's the biggest talk show in Chicago, and we appreciate the fact that you come on and talk to him. But I want to, again, emphasize that Mike Madigan is welcome here anytime. The speaker is always welcome here, and so far in the last year, Steve Brown has shown up and said he'll try to do it. There is no reason for Mike Madigan to be less accessible than the Queen of England, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that to the people of Illinois. All right. Now, having said all of that, he refused to convene the House this week. What does that do to the delay, other than the obvious means that we're going to wait at least two more weeks before anything moves?
This is a do-nothing General Assembly led by the Speaker, who really clearly has no sense of urgency to solve the state's problems. You know, the General Assembly met last spring. They passed 530 bills. Think about that. They passed 530 bills. And I love pumpkin pie, and I think corn on the cob is fantastic, and that's great that that's the state vegetable now. But we have a pension crisis. They didn't address it. We have a massive budget deficit. They passed nothing for new taxes. We have jobs leaving the state. They passed no regulatory reform so we can compete with Indiana and Texas, which are stealing all our manufacturing jobs. They did nothing to solve our problems. And the speaker has skipped four leader meetings. He skipped the last one we had. He's pushed against them and not wanted four leader meetings for 9 months now. And he's not calling the General Assembly back into session now for weeks while we have a crisis of no budget and jobs leaving the state and a punishing tax burden. If he's avoiding any challenging issues to solve problems. He's very focused on fundraising for the next election. He's totally focused on what's going to happen in the primaries and what's going to happen in the general election, and doing nothing on policy. It's all about politics in the next election.
Appreciate your time, again, your access, and look forward to talking to you again. Last question, is there an opportunity to force the House into session?
Well, I could demand that. That would cost taxpayers more money, because there's, overtime or special session fees. I don't want to charge taxpayers more. So I've just asked the Speaker in good faith, let's sit and negotiate at compromises. The President Cullerton so far has been willing to talk with me, but he's also said he's not going to step out in front of the Speaker. He's going to, let the Speaker lead on these issues. So the Speaker's got to step up, take his role more seriously, and work for the people of the state to solve problems, not just worry about posturing for the next election.
And if there is there a nuclear option? Have you sat down and said, if he refuses to budge in any way, shape, or form, and only wants the tax increase and no changes in union structure whatsoever, is there a nuclear option in some way? What do you do?
Well, I'll say this. I do have more cards to play. I don't want to do that because there are consequences to stronger actions. What I really want to do is just negotiate in good faith. Democracy involves compromise. Reasonable people can reasonably disagree. And the Speaker has his views of the size of government and taxes and regulation. I just want him to let some communities in the state who don't agree with him and want to compete for jobs and lower taxes, let's give them the options, the tools to do that. Not everybody agrees with the Speaker. I want to free up some communities to do that. In private, many Democrats agree with that it's reasonable. I've just got to bring the Speaker around, so we'll just stay persistent and keep negotiating.
And President Cullerton, I believe, is at the tipping point here. If this doesn't change in the next couple of weeks, my words, not yours, I believe President Cullerton's got to come out publicly and take a stand. We'll see. Thank you for your time.
Thanks very much.
That's Governor Rauner on the anniversary. And that's why I said, happy anniversary?
Right. 1 year. 1 year.
Happy anniversary. Yeah, there's got to be times where he goes, what the hell did I get myself into?
Well, he's probably sitting there, but taking the top off of his pen going, okay, I'm ready to sign, 1 year up. Well, not, 1 year and no budget.
Look, you either take him at his word or you don't. And if you believe he's lying, you're going to continue to believe he's lying. But if he strikes deals with unions and he's willing to talk about negotiating, you can't negotiate with someone who refuses to come in the room. And the idea that Mike Madigan won't convene the legislature at the predetermined date to even start the new session is appalling. But this is what's happening in Springfield. Tim McGill is standing by at Channel 9. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It took me 2 hours and 20 minutes morning to get to work.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we had a jackknife truck, which is part of the problem, but I was surprised at how bad the side streets were.
Uh-huh.
I thought this was going to be just a fluffy little nice friendly inch and a half. What happened last night?
Well, it was a fluffy little, actually 1 to 3, and you start blowing that around with these gusty winds. We've seen winds gust up to 45 miles an hour out of the west-northwest, and of course it doesn't take much to blow that across roads. That's part of the problem. Plus, it was so cold overnight, and it's hard to treat the roads when it's this cold. So, yeah, it's made for some slick streets out there this morning. We've got wind chills around 10 to 20 below in some spots this morning already.
So it's the wind, the 1 to 3 of fluff,
mm-hmm.
and
cold, too.
And people forgetting they're in Chicago and forgetting how to drive.
That must be it. Yeah, I had a tough time coming up from Lake County this morning, too. I saw a lot of spin-outs this morning. The roads were still really slick. But we've got Arctic cold behind the snow, so don't expect things to warm up. We might get up to around 12 or 13 this afternoon, but I'm expecting wind chills sub-zero all day long and all night long.
All right, and then as far as precip goes, the rest of the week, not much?
Well, maybe a half inch to an inch tomorrow afternoon, another one of these clipper systems, and then rain Friday that'll change to snow Friday night, Saturday, and we could see another couple of inches out of that. So nothing big, but kind of these nuisance snows that could slow you down, as we've learned this morning.
Do we know if the trucks got out on time last night? Did they know this was coming?
I would think so. It was pretty well advertised. I don't think it was a shock to anybody.
Skilling usually calls all the truck guys at home.
Yeah, he's got several phones.
He better. Thanks for the quickie. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than one night. Yeah.
8:12 in the morning. Steve Cochran Show continues live in the Allstate Showcase Studios. Show number 563 on Twitter at Cochran Show, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, and texters and phone calls to 312-981-7200. Dean Richards is at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at the brand new Johnny Carson exhibit. And for guys like you and I that grew up on Johnny Carson, that's got to be pretty cool.
It really is cool. This new exhibit that's opening today has some things that are replicas, like Carson's desk and the chairs where the guests sat. To see it in person, complete with green shag carpeting, I might add. It's very, very 70s. You can sit there with like a cutout of Johnny and have your picture taken like you're a guest on the show. But there are some of Johnny's actual costumes that he used, and Blabby, Floyd Turbo, the turban from Karnak is here. But like some cool artifacts, like Johnny Carson's Rolodex. And you can see like a little old-fashioned typed Rolodex card, Elizabeth Taylor, her phone number, how to get a hold of Elizabeth Taylor.
She doesn't answer now, does she?
I don't think so. She's been pretty quiet on the phone system lately. But all kinds of cool stuff. There's an outfit that was donated by Doc Severinsen. This really, really cool exhibit. It's opening today at 10 o'clock. It'll be here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications until like mid-October, something like that. If you're a Carson fan, just all kinds of really cool stuff to come and see. Someday there will be a Steve Cochran exhibit just like this.
They have it where they keep the brooms and the chemicals for the cleaners late at night.
That's where I saw your picture. I assumed that they were just starting working on such an exhibit.
Yeah, they got to move the pail, though, because you can't see me completely where it is right now. I got an opportunity to meet Carson a couple of times. I was lucky enough to be there during the last week of the show on a couple of those shows. And of all the great things that have happened to you, happened to me, and all the interesting people you meet, because, obviously we're lucky to do this. Good God. We don't have skills or anything else, but I don't lose sight of the fact how lucky we are to have these jobs.
Exactly.
Especially now. But I don't know if I've ever told you this story. A friend of mine was one of the civilian bookers on the show. So, like, the lady that had people that looked like something.
The potato chip lady, right?
Yeah, he'd find he'd find those people. So he introduced me to Carson, and, I'm like you. I don't get flabbergasted by people. But, I'm sure I said something like, "Oh, Mr. Carson, how are you?" And asked me what I did, and told him about the radio show I was doing at the time in Minneapolis. And he walked me out to the Star with a stand-up stand, because his buddy had told me I was a stand-up as well. And he goes, "I hope I get a chance to introduce you here before I run away." Shook my hand and walked off.
How about that? Wow.
And I just stood on the Star and wet myself.
That's awesome. That Star is still there because the special that we did, we went to the studio in Burbank where Johnny did the show for 20 years, and the seating is still there. The studio is not used for anything right now. Really, it's kind of a museum, but the seating is still there that's so recognizable, and that Star where you stood is still on the tile. And it's magical. It's magical to be in that spot and to think who stood in that place so many times through the years.
Every major stand-up comedy star of the last 50 years of the last century, from 1950 to 2000, every one of them got their biggest break on that Star on the night that Carson called them over the couch.
Yeah, when they were young comedians, getting their big break, hoping that it was going to work out. People like Jerry Seinfeld, Drew Carey, Ellen DeGeneres, Gary Shandling, Eddie Murphy. We just showed the Eddie Murphy's first appearance on The Tonight Show on the reruns that are on Antenna TV. Did I mention, Steve, that you can watch Johnny Carson weeknights at 10 o'clock on Antenna TV and on Saturday and Sunday? The 90-minute versions are on at 9 o'clock. Antenna TV is over-the-air digital 9.2 and over cable systems all over the Chicago area and all over the country, actually.
When you had a conversation with Sean Compton, Big Shot TV executive at Tribune Media, about doing a special. By the way, the special is great. Can we still get it online?
I don't know if it's online or not. That's a good idea. We'll work on that.
Yeah, we should be able to access it online. It's a special about the Carson shows coming to Antenna TV. But when you had this conversation with Sean Compton, did he say, of course we want to do it. It's a great idea, Dean. But I'm going to need you to do 500,000 plugs for it in the next 3 weeks.
No, that's just what I do.
Ah, I see.
How long have you known me?
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, you do it well.
How long have you known me plugging the Both Ogar and Ray special, which, by the way, will be on next Thanksgiving? I have to go on TV, Steve.
I know you do. We'll let you run. Go do it now.
All right, I'll see you. Bye.
See you later. That's Dean Richards live doing double duty this morning. Not that he doesn't every morning, but normally we have him for this swing of time. And is he doing Anna's job this morning?
He's doing around town doing Anna Balaval's job.
Yeah. Did I say Anna?
Yeah. Anna. Well, she says Anna, and Ariana says Anna.
It's Anna
Balaval.
It's Anna DeVlantis. It's Andre Darlis.
Yes.
And it's Anna Balaval.
Correct. Three times, fast.
And I am Steve Cochran. It's 8:18. It's traffic. It's Mary back with that on 720 WGN. What's happening, Mary? Would you like some State of the Union fun facts?
Yes.
Because I think when you think State of the Union, you think fun.
Of course.
Social media, this is all from ABC News. Social media, of course, gone nuts in the past few years, and it's also affected the State of the Union. There was a congressman from Tennessee, Steve Cohen, who exchanged affectionate tweets with a Texas college student during the address. They timestamped the tweets, and he was busted for flirting with a college student while he was supposed to be watching the State of the Union.
Does he not know the whole world gets Twitter?
Well, this is the guy. Remember, this is the guy that claimed the girl was his daughter?
Oh, yeah.
But then a DNA test proved otherwise?
Wasn't his daughter.
I'm sure that's a hot moment between the old guy and the mistress when he goes, here's what we'll do. We'll claim you're my daughter.
And then I'll adopt you. Right. Then it gets all gross.
The guy that says, Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States. This year, his name is Paul Irving. He's a sergeant of arms at the House of Representatives. I believe he's in charge of security, right, for the House? Isn't that the sergeant of arms
so.
Deal?
Yeah, the director of the Illinois State Police used to be the sergeant of arms.
He's elected at the start of each Congress by the members. The sergeant is the chief law enforcement officer of the House of Representatives, protecting that side of the Capitol. So you think he stands in front of his mirror? Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States! And then the place goes nuts.
You mean you think he practices so he doesn't identify the wrong person?
Yeah, I bet he does. Yeah, wouldn't you?
I would. Yeah, totally. Definitely would.
Into his hairbrush. Ladies and gentlemen.
It'd be cool though if they worked out something new tonight where he goes, give it up one time for the B-Man!
Peace!
Raise the roof!
The State of the Union, in recent years, members of Congress broke a 200-year tradition of sitting on their own side. In other words, Democrats would be on the left and Republicans on the right. I think it was two sessions ago. Was it the 2011? Yeah, 2011 State of the Union. They had date night where one of the senators or congressmen could invite a Republican or Democrat of the opposite party to sit by them.
Ooh.
Wow.
They get crazy.
So when it comes to Congress.
Forced integration.
Yeah, exactly. And when it comes to Congress, that's hot.
Oh, that's hot. Getting cray-cray.
That's totally hot. The Supreme Court hates being there. Some members of the court opt to sit the whole thing out because by being the third branch of government, they're supposed to be unbiased.
Yeah.
So they don't stand up. They don't applaud. They don't boo. They don't heckle.
They sit there.
Yeah. And you remember a few years ago when President Obama called out the Supreme Court while the Supreme Court sat there.
Yeah.
For making a decision he didn't like on campaign finance. It was considered to be a tremendous breach of protocol. So many of the Supreme Court justices, you know, I mean, they're all 1,000. You know, they're all ancient. So they can all, you know, well, Roberts, I suppose, isn't that old, but everybody else is fairly old.
Yeah.
And
That one guy served under Caesar.
He did. So they can go, listen, I'd like to come, but I'm nearly dead. So I don't feel like making my way over to the Capitol.
And one always falls asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
They doze off, and then they become, you know, the meme the next day.
Well, it's a designated person that has to fall asleep, along with the one that's left behind. The designated survivor's identity is kept secret until just hours before the president starts speaking, when one cabinet member is told they can't be there because if there's some Armageddon-like thing where the Capitol is taken out and everyone's killed inside, there has to be somebody left to run the country.
And they don't find out before, what, half an hour before?
It's a few hours before. Last year it was Flo from the Progressive commercials.
It was not her.
But, you know, you get the weird threesome picture with Biden, and this time it'll be Paul Ryan sitting behind the president and, you know, sometimes the non-party in office will have to stand up and applaud, and they go, all right. You know, so they have that look on their face.
Right. Give it up, though, for Paul Ryan, because he came down pretty hard on Ted Cruz, who's the only senator, the only presidential candidate who's in the active Senate who's not going to be there tonight. Yeah. He's holding his own event in New Hampshire. Paul Ryan called him out for that.
It almost makes you think Ted Cruz is only in this for him. I don't know. No. Maybe that's me. But here's something I didn't know. The rules stipulate that members can't save seats in the House. So if you're bringing a guest to the State of the Union and every member of Congress gets to bring one guest, you can't save a seat for them.
Oh, it's open seating?
Yeah, well, you can go, but if you sit there wherever you choose to sit, you have to save your guest seat by actually being physically there.
Oh.
So if you want one of those aisle seats where you can high-five the president or get the smooch on the way in, some of the members of Congress have to stay in session for up to 10 hours.
Oh.
Where they're sitting there waiting for their seats like it's the unbelievable concert ticket they couldn't get anywhere else.
So the coat thing doesn't work anymore?
Yeah,
no.
What about a scarf?
No, the security will remove the coat.
They should have seat fillers like they do at the Oscars.
I was going to say, they probably do, right?
You know?
Yeah. How about called it?
Yeah, right.
Called it. Totally called
Music
it.
Music stopped.
John, you'd be a good seat filler.
I told
no.
you they were fun facts.
No, right?
I told you. I told you
those
they were totally good. Fun facts. It's The Who, and we play that for Coach Q, because Coach Q loves The Who. We continue with the Wintrust Community Bank Hour. Coach Q will join us in just a moment. And when he does, I'll be happy. Oh, I forgot to mention, by the way, Dean, sponsored by the Captain James A. Level Federal Health Care Center. And we love the great work those people do every day. Coach Q, sponsored by, am I right about this? Is it sponsored by Hooters? I mean, why wouldn't
it? As always, absolutely.
Yeah, because you know why? Hooters is not just a wing joint. It's
a lifestyle.
It's not just the original wing joint. It's a way of life. It really is. Yeah.
Great wings.
Coach Joel Quenneville joins us now. You ever look at your own statistics, Coach?
No.
Well, I'm going to do it for you. You know how close you are to Al Arbor now?
I guess we're getting close.
Career wins. There's only Scotty Bowman. And, Coach, by my count, you'll have to live to be 147 to catch Scotty. but there's Scotty Bowman and Al Arbor ahead of you. When you got into coaching, and I know you're not good talking about yourself here, but when you got into coaching, did you imagine you would have this kind of run?
No, not at all. No, I was, you know, I think when you begin after being a player and you move around a little bit, you think that you know, I was happy to be a player assistant coach in the American League, and then maybe one day get to be a coach in the National League was a distant dream. And you know, I've been very fortunate the way things have worked out, though. But it's happened really fast, and the years go by now so quickly. It's amazing, you know, how when you look back, how fortunate I've been, and had special days everywhere I've been, but nothing can compare to the time we've had here in Chicago.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, in baseball, catchers make the best managers. Catchers are the guys that have to manage the game. I would think in hockey.
I used to be a catcher.
Well, so there you go. You were born to be a coach, my friend. You were born to be a coach. But I would think defensemen, because of your view of the game and because you are literally playing both ends of the ice, you're probably, if you're inclined at all for coaching down the road, defenseman's the position that's more likely to come from.
Well, you could argue a lot of goaltenders are either in the coaching profession or in the broadcasting business. There's some defensemen as well, but I think it's pretty balanced as far as you know, positional players turning into coaches. But I look back, the coincidental thing is the number of players from the Hartford Whaler days that are all part of coaching in different situations, and head coach, assistant coaches, managers, scouts, So it's been nice seeing the evolution of that group and that team still around the game and doing things and
that's great.
Mostly coaching.
Who was your mentor? Who was somebody that you looked up to as a coach where you said, if I do this, I'd like to be that guy?
Well, the one guy that really had an influence on me was Roger Nielsen when I first turned pro in Toronto. He was our head coach, and when I went to St. Louis and became head coach, Roger was one of the assistants there with me, too. So both times it began at first in the National League, Roger was around, and Roger's the most organized guy, basically devoted his whole life to hockey. Everything was hockey, and come up with all kinds of different ways of analyzing the game and prepared his team to like no other coach. And so there's a lot of things that the way we do business around here come from Roger, and basically you know, the mindset of organizing and preparing is something that really that was a big theme of his.
Now, I know all the good things you do, and it's everything that I'm watching. And by the way, three cups prove that to be true. But is there something as a coach you go, man, I wish I did that better?
I don't know if I'm great at anything. I just know that, you know, you got to be yourself. And, you know, there's certain things you can always be regretful for. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe not swear at the referees as much.
I don't know. I don't know. I think when it happens, they have it coming. I think you do a pretty good job of not blowing your stack.
I'm getting better, that's for sure.
So we got a busy week, obviously. The Hawks have spent a lot of time on the ice. Less practice time, more game time. I know that's your preferred way to go anyway. But it's funny. I was looking at stats for Taves. And Jonathan Taves, it just feels like a different year. But if you look at the statistical splits between last year and this year, I mean, it's almost the same season. I don't know. What is it about this year that feels different? Is it because maybe we're focused more on Panarin or something?
Well, I think the start, you know, Kaner was very productive, and it was game in, game out, that streak. You know, there's a lot of attention towards that way, and the Panarin and that line was definitely doing the bulk of the scoring, and we're looking for offense from other lines. But Johnny's line recently has been excellent, and then one thing about Johnny, whether they're scoring or not on his line, you know, they absorb all that attention of the other team's top line. It's a matchup that we're comfortable with, whether they're scoring or not, that you know, we trust and we feel that we can still influence the big part of the game against their top players and frees up some other time for other guys. And I think that's always been one of the staples here. But I think Johnny's the pucks are going a little bit more in more often for him, which we like, and we feel there's more balance to our team game. But Johnny hasn't played any different than he has in the past. And in fact, you know, whether it's off faceoffs or playing the right way, you know, what a great illustration of representing how we want our team to play is, you know, just watch Johnny play.
You know, Davey had 13 goals last year through December. Mm-hmm. He had 11 this year. Yeah. Same guy. Of course, this year they're all in overtime, and they win every game. Dave, say hi to Coach.
Yeah, morning, Coach.
Morning, Dave.
Nashville, you saw him last month. He had a home-and-home with him, split those two games. But they're a little different now because they did make a trade since then. How do they look different to you?
Well, they're. I always find they're a tough team to play, and they're very competitive. You know, excellent defense, strong defensive-minded team, but they come at you with quickness, and they got some offensive guys that can make plays. We found nobody played better for us or against us in that first period than we saw in Nashville. They totally dominated us, and we're fortunate in the game prior to that to get out of a slow start and win the game here. So it's a. It's a team we're very respectful for. Last year in the playoffs, we saw what they're capable of for the majority of the season. Last year, they're number one in the league. So there's some depth there. There's some improvement in their game. This year, they're going through an ordinary stretch with that trade triggered two games ago, and they're still on the same trip, which makes it for a dangerous opponent here tonight. Johansson gives them some speed and some skill, and you know, he's a young guy, traded for another young guy. Both teams got their needs filled, and you know, I think Nashville's got one more forward that's dangerous. Their back end's excellent, so it's a you know, it's going to set up for a great game tonight. But we know that they're a very hungry and a dangerous team, knowing that you know, they still haven't won on this trip. So I'm sure they're coming in here thinking that they got to get something done.
Well, that makes for an interesting question too, right? Because what's more dangerous, an under talented team that overperforms, or an over talented team like Nashville that's been underperforming?
Well, I think everybody has stretches over the year where you can say that even you're not winning games, but you play hard, you're going to find your way out of it. And I think one thing about Nashville, they're very competitive, always work. They got a workmanlike team, and they got they got the right approach. So it's not from a lack of trying. So we expect these guys to be hungry tonight, almost to a different level here. We anticipate playoff type intensity. So that's. Basically that's the standard every night. And then when teams are struggling a little bit, it's just a matter of time before they're going to get out of it.
Nice to see Hossa get on the score sheet the other night.
Yes, it was. I know that he's had some great looks, and nice to get the finish for him. I think that can help him in those areas here. But nobody's missed more breakaways, high-quality scoring chances all along with a goal this year than Haas. And getting two certainly can help him in that line as well, getting some production.
You look at all these presidential candidates. What type of a hockey player would Donald Trump be? Would he be tough to coach?
I think he'd be all right to coach, but I don't know if he's going to be bothering his teammates. He's kind of like Shazzy a little bit, He's
not a one to shut up.
Yeah. Entertaining.
Could you get a helmet over that hair, do you think? Or?
Do you need one? He might have just got a bigger size, that's all.
Hey, I'll text you highlights for the State of the Union tonight because I know you're working.
Thank you.
Coach, it's always great talking to you. Congratulations on the success. I don't mean to make you uncomfortable talking about how well you're doing, but you seem like you're on a pretty good run here for a career. I suggest you stick with this line of work.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm enjoying it.
All right, man. All the best.
Thanks.
That's Coach Joel Quenneville, sponsored by Hooters. America's Chicken Wing. What? That's not right. Is that not the Hooters isn't America's Chicken Wings? They are. They really are.
As far as I'm concerned.
Hooters! Man, do they taste good.
I'm not sure.
Is that the slogan?
It's close.
No. You're getting there.
Hooters! Wow! Look at that! Is that their slogan?
Kind of, yeah. When you go there.
You mean look at the wings. Look at the wings.
I lost the plug sheet.
Where is that Hooters card, by the way?
Is it America's Wing Joint? Oh, yeah. The official wing joint of the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah. Okay. How about Coach Q?
Huh? How about him?
Is he off probation? Because he's doing pretty well. I mean, it's a pretty good run for him.
Do you know, in a profession where coaches are tossed aside like yesterday's paper?
Sure.
I mean, all the time. He is second, I believe, in seniority among all
is that right?
National Hockey League. I think...
Behind the
Julian in Boston, I think he's the only one who's been on the job longer.
Hooters, the original wing joint.
I like when you asked him if he follows stats. No,
I don't think he does.
I really don't see Coach Q sitting at home going, "Man, am I good?"
Yeah.
It's traffic. Mary's back with it. Are we getting any help out there? Is it getting lighter at all? $1.5 billion by the time they do the Powerball draw tonight. Estimates range somewhere between $1.75 and $2 billion. If not for the bitterly cold Midwestern weather, I'm sure those ticket sales would be even higher. Though I know that won't stop you from standing in line today and buying tickets. And if you're in charge of your office pool, kiting away a few just for you.
Oh, we need to get tickets, by the way. Aren't we doing like a morning show?
Mm.
Well, maybe we all will, because someone will have to hold on the fort when we retire.
Yes.
To go live on our island.
Just a quick honesty test here. Mary, if you were to win the Powerball, would we ever hear from you again? All right, just checking.
We don't hear from her when she goes on vacation now.
Yeah, because she's very private. She keeps to herself. Dave, I think you'd keep working.
I would. I would.
I won $40 in instant lotto the other day.
See?
And I'm here.
She still comes in.
Are you like a scratch-off thing?
Yeah, scratch-off. $40. I've never won that.
I save myself a lot of time. You know what I do? I just drive by the gas station and throw $2 out the window. It's much easier than actually getting out of the car, going in, getting the ticket, and losing them.
Well, I never do either. My husband just got me one, so.
It's a time saver. Did you share the money with him?
No.
No.
It was part of my birthday present.
Scratch-off tickets?
Yeah, I like to do them. They're fun.
By the way, Mary, I have your money. I owe Mary some money.
Oh,
she bought me
a
Mary
ticket.
Yeah.
Mary's surprise birthday party. When was your birthday?
The 5th. Last Monday.
Yeah, Mary's surprise last birthday Tuesday. Party, because we always forget birthdays on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Friday. Oh, is that cool. when we're doing Mary's cool. surprise birthday party?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Surprise
party's Friday. Supposed to make my
awesome.
Surprise cake?
Yeah, can, you make,
yeah, could
can
you,
you make the cake?
Could you make the cake for yourself and bring the candles?
Sure, no problem. Awesome. I'm not supposed to have chocolate, though, so it's not going to be any fun.
Yeah, bring something that's really nasty.
Kale cake. No.
Kale cake. Yeah. I don't think is that even possible? Hey, before we move on to the exclusive interview with the Powerball, we're lining up right now. Steve, you said this is, and USA Today is reporting this as well, this is the seventh State of the Union address. The seventh State of the Union address, but he's been in office 8 years. That's because the first one doesn't count, is that right?
You know, I'm not sure how that works.
No, the first one is a joint session. It's the joint session of Congress, so it's considered as an unofficial address.
Because you haven't had the gig long enough to assess
right,
the State of the Union.
This will be his eighth speech.
Right.
But the seventh State of the Union, because the first one was not classified as an official.
I think
address.
We all remember in 2009 when President Obama stood up and said, the State of the Union is yet to be determined because I just got here.
TBD.
Yeah. Anybody have any questions? Because I got nothing.
And then tonight, I guess what? He just throws the mic on the floor and says, I'm out.
Yeah. I still think a hat. I mentioned this top of the show today. A Hawks hat, maybe a Taze jersey, and a mic drop. That's a good speech.
That would be good speech. Yeah. I don't foresee that.
I mean, he's coming home here anyway for a while, right?
Well, we think. I mean, he did buy a house in Hawaii, so he could be moving there after he comes home. Who knows? His library's going to be here, but he may not be here.
I bet he'll stay here for a while. And then the rumor is he might move to New York.
Why would he want to be in New York?
Yeah.
Well, not in the city, not in like in Times
I mean,
Square.
He can get the ridiculous speaking fees and fly out of O'Hare.
He can fly to Hawaii for that.
So, well, I'd spend time in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Beautiful.
But again, tonight is you'll hear this reported all day, the seventh State of the Union, the eighth time he has done a joint address to Congress.
The eighth time he is speaking to the nation.
That's right.
By the way, you didn't ask me if I would leave, if I would quit if I won the Powerball.
No, you'd stay with me.
Oh, yeah, of course, right. Yeah, I would totally stay with you.
Yeah,
once a month, I'd check in.
There's the great concern tonight, at least it should be, is that a rich guy wins. Somebody successful wins the Powerball. Now, there's a statistic that came up a second ago that I shared off the air with you guys. 40% of lottery winners lose all their money in 5 years. 40, not four. 40% of lottery winners have no more than they had when they started in less than 5 years. So that would make the argument that maybe uninformed folks or you know, poorer folks, maybe it's not so great that they win.
I want to know the stat, too, though. There's a stat.
More, I keep saying tonight.
It's more people than you think have won. Lottery winners have previously won before.
Say it again.
Someone who you normally wins,
yeah.
Not normally, but
yeah.
The stat is pretty high, higher than you would think.
Repeat winners. Huh.
It's strange.
Yeah, look, it's $1.5 billion. It will definitely be $1.75 by the time it's over. It could be close to $2. It's going to be somewhere between, let's say it's an Illinois winner. Let's say it's you in the Hyundai. It could be somewhere between $700 million and $1 billion in walk-away money. If you just take the lump sum in Illinois, all taxes included. So it's a lot. But the one consideration is, how does the Powerball feel? Let's go to the phone now where the Powerball is standing by. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Is this the Powerball?
It is.
Is this Powerball? Do you have some sort of breathing apparatus on?
No, when people don't realize this, Steve, that the bigger the Powerball gets, the bigger I am. And I am just so fat right now. Don't look at me, Steve.
So you have fattened up considerably because of the size, the record size of the lottery. This is the biggest Powerball ever. This makes literal sense, doesn't it?
It's exactly what it is. I miss the days when I was the Powerball for, like, Cuba, and we'd get, like, a big money of, like, $172.
And that's when you felt good about yourself.
I was like, I can handle this, but somebody's got to win.
All right, so if somebody wins tonight, it's great. Otherwise, your life is in jeopardy.
I wish it was tonight. I do, but it's tomorrow.
Why
night.
Do I keep saying tonight? It's tomorrow night.
Were you like in the car for 2 hours or something?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I was, Powerball. All right, so Powerball, it's creeping me out to hear how tough it is for you to breathe.
It's so difficult. I wanted somebody to win. Do you know that there are six states that don't do the Powerball?
I did not.
Yeah, there are six of them. One of them is Nevada because they don't want it. They don't want to do it because you can't win.
Right, and Nevada's all about winners and mostly losers.
It's not really gambling if you can't win.
Yes, I understand. How did you get into this game, Powerball?
I started out in a little town in Buenos Aires.
What did you do there, like a dice game?
No, I was working at a general store.
Okay. I don't know how one comes to the other. But listen, I wish you well, and I hope we get a winner tomorrow night because it doesn't sound like you're in great health. What's your cholesterol right now?
I'm right out. I can't tell you where I'm at.
You can't tell me where you're at?
Yeah, I can't tell you where I'm at. It's illegal. I'm in Alabama because they don't play the game.
Okay, it's safe for you there.
They have a lotto, but whoever wins just gets shoes.
All right, Powerball, nice to talk to you. Maybe we'll check in with you tomorrow.
Oh, please do. Just hope I'm alive.
All right, that's the Powerball. That's
the Powerball. It didn't sound like he was in good health.
No. Oh. Remember, the bigger the Powerball gets, the bigger the Powerball gets.
A lot to carry around.
I got to say, I didn't see that coming.
No.
It's a good thing all the states don't do it. He'd be even bigger.
Yeah, no kidding. It's 9:20, the big fat Powerball. Need a winner tomorrow night to keep him alive. Back after this on 720 WGN. At 9:26, we note with sadness the passing of someone who lived to be 109. If you lived to be 109, you probably don't need to be sad about it, right? 109, that's a hell of a run. But Bill Del Monte passed away. It was confirmed on Monday. William A. Bill Del Monte died in a retirement home in Marin County in Northern California, 11 days shy of his 110th birthday. He's been doing great for 109. He was 3 months old when the San Francisco earthquake of 1906 struck. How about that? You know what happened in 1906? The Cubs were the hottest team in baseball.
Yes, they were.
In 1906, he was 3 months old. He survived. He is the last survivor of the San Francisco quake. 109. I mean, that's something else. Del Monte attended San Francisco schools and after graduation went to work for his father at their North Beach restaurant. He was always interested in playing the stock market. He got pretty good at it. He lost some money. He made some money. But he also gained a wife, a beautiful woman named Vera Minetti. They eloped to Reno in 1935. And they were married for 57 years until she passed away in 1992. Never had any children. His true passion was always playing the stocks. He also ran a San Francisco theater. Prior to his passing, Ruth Newman was the oldest remaining survivor of the earthquake. She died last summer. She lived to be 113. Wow. She was 4 years old when the earthquake hit. She probably remembered it. But the Chicago fire is to Chicago as the earthquake is to San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. So that was 6 years before the Titanic, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And there are still a few survivors left, are there not?
The Titanic?
From the Titanic.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
I think the last one passed away.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah, really?
Pretty sure.
I ever told you the story?
Yes.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, yes. I mean, I don't love it. It's just an interesting story. It's sad.
I don't think I should say
it. No, sad. Come on, tell it.
Yes.
You already started it. It's out there now.
First off, more than 1,000 people were killed in the earthquake and the fires in San Francisco. The earthquake is estimated to have ranged between a 7.7 and an 8.3. It was the biggest earthquake in San Francisco until, was it 89?
Yeah, the World Series.
The World Series earthquake. Yeah. Okay, it's the mid-90s, and I was on The Loop. And my producer was a guy named Grunwald, Steve Grunwald. We called him Grunwald because, you know, that's who he was. And it was a Friday. It was a very busy show. And must have been right around the time the movie was coming out. Wasn't the Titanic movie in the late 90s?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the movie.
98, maybe. So, isn't that when it was, John?
Yeah, it says Leonardo DiCaprio still alive.
Yes, Leonardo DiCaprio is still alive. So the movie's coming out, and Grunwald, the producer, sets up an interview with one of the oldest survivors of the Titanic who lived in Chicago, or lived in the Chicago area, in the Midwest. So the show is very busy. It was busy.
Well, no, I don't. When it's a busy news day or things happen, you tend to sometimes have to move the guests around.
And Grunwald wasn't terribly organized at times. So it got to be a little before 10, and it occurred to me we hadn't talked to the Titanic lady. So I said, well, what happened? He goes, we had to bump her. We'll talk to her Monday. She died that weekend.
I mean, how sad. How were you to know?
That's terrible.
How were you to know?
Could have been her last interview.
Terrible story.
Could have been her last interview.
It's so sad.
Maybe she thought she already had done it.
That would have been a great interview, though. Really would have been great.
I still feel guilty about it. I'm glad you guys made me bring it up.
It would have been cool if you had a chance to ask her, but well, now we can't really relive that, I know.
No, not now. No, no.
What's done is done.
Wonder who the last survivor of this show is going to be.
I think that would be called a Titanic mistake.
Yes, it would. Oh. Yes, it would. He's not wrong about that. No. It's 9:30, and now that we're all sad and depressed, we'll take a break, come back, and get the big story next. You wouldn't believe what Governor Rauner said about ROM. Stand by for that on 720 WGN.
It's time to stomp the millennials. It's time to stomp the millennials.
John DeCosta and Dave Ennett have a question of peace. Andre and I will pepper the millennials with a slew of questions. And we'll see if we can stump the millennials. The premise of the game, once again, as we introduce the contestants here, is just to prove that the millennials know what's going on and are much more than just an iPhone. First off, let me welcome Katie O'Connor to the program. Katie, what do you do here?
I'm the digital sales coordinator here.
All right. So you coordinate then digital sales.
That's exactly what I do.
That's exactly right. That's as a game show host. You'll see that I took the biographical information and I reincorporated it into an ad lib. Snappy. And your name is Ross Cochran?
It is.
And for some reason, your microphone's not working.
It is. All right. Well, then.
Is it plugged in?
It is this time. Yeah. It wasn't plugged in that one time.
You and Katie can share a mic. Briefly, and Ross, what do you do here?
I'm still trying to figure that out. It's only been a year.
All right. Congratulations on that. And good luck in your future. In addition to that, let's go to Kevin Powell. And Kevin, what is your line of work?
I produce the Steve Cochran Show, which airs 6 to 10. Monday through Friday on 720 WGN.
Any success in that whatsoever?
Pretty well. Yeah, pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And what is your role on the show again?
Producer? Like, what do I do exactly?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Book the guests, do some audio stuff, make sure there's food here every once in a while for breakfast.
Sounds like important stuff, Kevin. Thank you for joining us. Let's get the game started with the first category, which is potpourri. Potpourri. Any of the millennials can answer this question in potpourri. Mark Wahlberg is a very famous movie actor. Prior to becoming a very famous movie actor, what career did he have?
Kevin.
And what? Yes, Kevin.
He was a rapper.
He was a rapper.
Yes.
And the follow-up question, Kevin.
Okay.
Which can only be answered by you. What was the name of his rap group and his name in it?
Oh, wasn't he Marky Mark something? And then, what was the name of the band?
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll give you 1 point for that.
Okay.
Nice start by Kevin. With either one of you, Ross or Katie, like the answer, Marky Mark and?
The Pantsuits.
Sorry, Marky Mark and the Pantsuits is incorrect.
Is it the Wave?
Marky Mark and the Wave is incorrect. The answer you're looking for is Marky Mark and?
The Funky Bunch.
The Funky Bunch. That's correct. But 1 point out of two isn't bad. Let's go to Andrea for question number two. Is there a category for this?
This is a history category.
History,
Steve.
History.
But I think a somewhat easy question that I have a lot of faith in our millennials that they'll get.
Are you directing this towards any millennial in particular?
Any millennial can answer.
Buzz in by saying iPhone. iPhone will be your buzzer.
All right. The question is, who was involved in the Cold War? The Cold War.
Who was involved in the Cold War? Buzz in by saying iPhone.
iPhone?
Yes, Kevin.
United States and the Soviet Union?
Well, I was going for the USSR, but we will go with the
Soviet
Union.
That's correct. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank God I saw Bridge of Spies this year.
Yes. Kevin has already accumulated 1.5 millennial points.
Kevin?
I only got half for that one?
You got a half for the first one.
Oh, I thought you said I got one.
I changed the score.
Oh, okay. One and a half.
Let's go to Dave Ennett now. Dave, your question for the millennials.
Okay, my question is this. This is an example of what? This is an example.
Is this for any of the millennials, Dave? You could target this to a millennial if you like.
No, I don't really.
And therefore double their chance at points.
Oh, really? Well, Ross is a new dad. Maybe I'll do that.
All right, this is going to Ross with a 2-point question. Ross?
This is an example of what? Madison 5, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Madison 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. Stump the millennials. Ross, what is he describing?
I'm going to go with a sandwich from Wisconsin.
A sandwich?
5, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Oh, a sandwich from the 5, 1, 2, 3, 4 zip code. Is that correct, Dave?
That is not correct.
What, in fact, were you talking about?
That is a telephone number.
Yes, it is, because those numbers used to come with a name first.
Right.
And usually the first letter in the name would be indicative of the area where the phone was, correct?
Correct. And to dial it, you would then have to dial 625-1234.
Because that's where the M was.
Yeah. M-A.
I don't know what dialing is.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't even think about
point.
That.
It's a valid point.
Okay, follow up. What is dialing?
Yeah, let's go to the scoreboard now. Kevin has 1.5 millennial points. Ross at 0. Katie at 0. But a chance to score now. Let's go to John DeCoste for question number 4.
Any of the millennials can answer this. When you purchased for the first time a VCR, there was a competitive tape. It was VHS and
what was the other format in taping recorded programs? Taping or recording programs, what was the other format that could be used? A technical question should be right up the millennials' alley. This is technology history. Buzz in by saying iPhone.
I'll go iPhone.
Yes, Ross.
It's a KHS. It was a VHS, but it was made out of kale because that was the original use of kale.
That is incorrect, and we're actually going to give you a negative point there.
That's fair.
You now have minus one, son. Kevin or Katie, a chance to buzz in.
I got nothing. I have no idea.
Nothing is incorrect. Katie? VHS or?
The answer is not jackfruit.
Katie, it rhymes with beta. It rhymes with beta.
Data.
Johnny.
Data does rhyme with beta. You got to give her a half.
All right, we'll give you a half point for knowing for a word that rhymes with beta. John, VHS and?
Beta.
Beta. Beta is actually the answer.
He gave me
beta.
The answer.
We would also accept the Beta Max, or that's a stupid question. We would accept any of those. So let's go to the scoring now. Kevin at 1.5. Katie is 1/2 point. Ross is at -1. Andrea, question 5.
This is an entertainment question.
Ooh, an entertainment question. Who will you be targeting? Oh, anyone.
Any of the millennials.
Oh, this is exciting.
I have faith in all of them. I think Katie might get this one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new reunion show that's coming out. All the hype.
Kevin, iPhone, Full House.
I'm sorry, that's not the answer.
Maybe, yes, it is.
Maybe iPhone. You need to listen to the full question.
Didn't listen to the question, Kevin. We're going to take 1 point away. You're back to 1/2 point.
There's a new reunion show coming up starring John Stamos and Bob Saget called Fuller House.
Yes.
It's a spinoff on a show that was called Full House.
Yes.
That aired in the 80s.
Right.
Just name one character
iPhone.
On that show.
Joey.
Who is Joey? Was Joey on the show?
Yes,
yeah.
Joey.
There's
right. Joey.
Give you Joey.
You got your point back, but you lost some man points for knowing that much about Full House.
Oh, great show. Love the show.
What character has a show? Like another show now.
Some man points.
Let's go back now to Mary for a special bonus question. Mary, you have a Fuller House follow-up.
No, I was just saying, what a character in that show has another sitcom on today?
iPhone. Steve, pick me.
Yes, Steve.
It's John Stamos in Grandfather.
Yes. You like that show? It's pretty good, actually.
You get no points.
Yeah, no points for you.
Next up, politics. The category is politics. Again, this is for any of the millennials, and you can cut the tension with a knife here. I can tell you this right now. The Soviet Union, previously mentioned during this edition of Stump the Millennials, was at one point run by Mikhail Gorbachev. Mikhail Gorbachev had a distinguishing characteristic, something physically that he was known for. What would that physical manifestation be? Please, again, buzz in by saying iPhone.
iPhone?
Yes.
I believe it was like a mole or something on the top of his head because he was going bald. And it was some very like ugly sort of skin feature.
Because you used the word ugly in the same sentence as bald, I can only give you half a point.
That's fair.
But we'll take a half a point away from your negative total. Brings you up to a negative half point. Congratulations. Another politics question, since that one went so well, again to any of you. An independent candidate in 1992 tipped the election from President George Bush to Bill Clinton. Now we're talking about the possibility of Donald Trump doing the same if he's not the Republican nominee. See what I did there? Time now for you to name who that independent candidate was. It was 1992. Which independent?
iPhone. Ross Perot.
Ross Perot is correct. Did you know that because your name's Ross?
Yes.
That's tremendous.
Is that who he's named after?
We were considering middle name Perot, but we decided against it.
Good call.
And his first word was, nah! So congratulations. You are now at one half point to the good.
I'm working on it, yeah.
You are tied with Katie. Kevin's at a point. No, what are you at, Kevin?
I have no idea.
He's a point. Check.
Gave you a point, a point and a half.
We're supposed to answer questions and keep our own score.
He's got two, I think.
It's a point and a half. Yeah. Point and a half for Kevin. Okay. A half point. Actually, I'm taking a half point away from Kevin because of his attitude in answering what his score was. So Kevin has 1 point. Katie and Ross have a half point each. Stump the Millennials, Andrea.
Oh, Stump the Millennial. Sorry, I was trying to find some music for
you. Do you have another question?
I do have another question. This is a music question.
Uh-huh.
Which of the following bands were not female-fronted? Which of these was not a female-fronted?
They did not have a female lead.
Not a female-fronted pop
band.
Name
the pop
the
band that didn't have a female lead. You're giving them choices.
Yes. The Bangles, the Buggles,
yes.
Bananarama,
yes.
Or the Honeybees.
Yes. Who did not have a female lead?
The Bangles, the Buggles, the Honeybees,
iPhone.
Or Bananarama?
Kevin.
The Bangles.
No, unfortunately, Susanna Hoffs was their lead singer.
Oh, I always forget about Susanna Hoffs.
Yeah,
yeah.
She's kind of hot.
I always forget about her.
She's kind of hot.
Did she have a thing for you? Wasn't that a
whole she did, actually.
She did, yeah.
She not you, Kevin.
Oh,
sorry. She did.
Chance?
iPhone?
Yes.
I'll go with Bananarama because that sounds the least like a real band.
Bananarama was three female leads. Siobhan Fahey was their lead singer.
Oh, I always forget about Siobhan Fahey. Yeah. She always sneaks up on me in these contests.
For you.
She did. She liked
and there's one possibility left. Two, only two bands. You got a 50-50 shot at this, Katie. Would you buzz in?
The Buggles or the Honeybees?
You have to say iPhone.
iPhone.
All right, go ahead.
I'm going to go with maybe the Buggles.
No, the Buggles. Why? Well, I didn't think my question was that great. Buggles sang Video Killed the Radio Star having a female-fronted lead singer. The Honeybees I just made up.
Yes, the Honeybees actually may have been a man, but they definitely did not have a female lead. All right, so again, the scoring is Ross has 1 half point. Katie has 1 half point. I'm taking another half point away from Kevin because he's trying to produce the show and trying to speed me up here. It's now a three-way tie at a half point. This is actually for the win. For the win on Stump the Millennials, our final question. J-Lo was famous 25 years ago when she first broke on the scene in one of Fox Television's earliest shows. Name the show J-Lo got her big break on, and I'll give you an additional clue. It was not The Simpsons.
Hmm.
iPhone.
Yes.
Was she Jenny from the Block then?
Yes. Actually, she was. Yes.
Yeah.
That wasn't the show. I'm considering you're just stalling to try to come up with the answer. It was
but
a show that also
it
was a show that also made Jamie Foxx famous.
Oh my gosh, I know that one.
It was a show that featured Jim Carrey and was Jim Carrey's big break.
He kind of creeps me out.
That has nothing to do with whether or not you know the answer.
iPhone.
Yes.
Living in Color?
That's close. That's pretty good.
Ross with a half point for sort of knowing the answer. Congratulations. You've won this edition of Stump the Millennials. The actual answer is In Living Color.
Being a new dad, I get my words confused.
Right, which was started by the Wayans brothers, which I know you knew as well. You've been listening to Stump the Millennials, a show that should frighten all of you with a lack of knowledge of anything beyond 2004 by the millennial generation. Thank you all for playing our game.
That was super fun. I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, that was great.
They're good sports for letting us.
Kevin's not. I've taken away his final
okay,
half point.
Sorry, Kevin.
Kevin's back to zero.
So I got second place?
Apparently. Yeah, I've lost track of the score. Now, I'm told there is some sort of revenge competition
coming.
Yeah,
we're doing Stump the Old People. I'm tired of this this mockery of my people. So next time, it's going to be Stump the Old People.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Kev, when do you want to do Stump the Old People?
We'll have to take a look at the schedule.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be
you can tell me. I'd forget by the end of the show anyway. And it's only 5 minutes
Maybe
away.
Sometime this week. We do have some openings.
So you,
we're
Dave,
not
and
old
Mary.
People. We're That'll be baby good. Boomers.
It'll be good that you guys participate in that.
Stump the Old People coming later this week to the Steve Cochran Show, hosted by Katie Ross and Bitter Kevin. It's 9:55. Bill and Wendy are next at 720 WGN.
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh. The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk
Chicago
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Sponsored by Fresh Wave. Remember, if it smells funky like the wrong end of a monkey, you need Fresh Wave.
It's not it, Steve.
Oh, okay.
They're also the official deodorizer of the Chicago Blackhawks.
That's what I said.
Yes.
Right, ready when you're ready.
Okay. We thought we ought to take a moment to salute Marian Hossa.
That's exactly right.
Right?
Two
goals the other night. I know it's Wendy's favorite player.
Well, he looks like you.
See, I don't think so. But that's not why I mentioned him.
Mm-hmm.
He was born 37 years ago today.
Happy birthday, Hoss.
1979 in Czechoslovakia, and he is nearing another NHL milestone. Remember, he played on a couple of Stanley Cup finalists in Pittsburgh and Detroit, losing in the finals both those years, and then signing with the Blackhawks a 12-year deal in the summer of 2009. And the following summer, he was celebrating a Stanley Cup after three straight appearances in the finals. Now, his two goals in Sunday's win over Colorado left him with 493 goals. He is seven away from one of the game's great milestones, 500 goals. Alex Ovechkin of Washington just scored his 500th on Sunday.
Dirty coming.
So happy birthday. See, this is a nice feel-good thing that somehow took a strange
what?
Turn.
I didn't say anything.
Right. Happy birthday, number 81, Marian Hossa. That's our Hawkopedia for today.
Bill and Wendy are here. How are you guys?
Fantastic.
We're excellent. Both Wendy and I have a favorite moment from your show today.
Go
Can
ahead.
We share it with you, Wendy? Do you want to
First off, Wendy looks adorable in her gang wear.
Yeah, street.
Brand new line of Wendy fashion wear, dressed like the gang member down your street.
Yo, what up, y'all?
Yo.
Yes, who's got a moment?
I loved the moment where you said Dave Ennett wears makeup to the jewel.
Well, you know, the truth hurts.
That was great.
It's a fact, and he always looks sexy in the produce aisle.
Yes.
Nice melons.
I do not do that.
If you're leaving TV, you still have it on.
Bill, what was your moment?
Well, the thing I love most about your show is the jokes fly so fast and furiously. It's like an episode of That Girl. You got to watch it more than once to really get all the jokes.
A lot of people call me Ted.
So Andrea was explaining how her diet has been going, and she said that she had a veggie fajita, and you, in a very Trump-like moment, said, "You're a veggie fajita," for no reason at all.
I heard that, too. It sounded like a 10-year-old boy.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
It's our little, how we say sweet nothings.
I don't know what that means.
That was beautiful.
I do.
You just went on undaunted. You didn't even stop. You just went.
She knows.
She's got to work with me every day.
Of
course she went on undaunted. Yeah. One day she was daunted, and it didn't work out for her.
You're daunted. I totally heard that. It was
that
like
great?
I hear that at home from my 13-year-old. Yeah.
Just you say are. Whatever the other person said
right.
back to them.
You right. come here for maturity. You took a left turn somewhere.
We're
back. We're back here tomorrow. Stand by for that. Here comes Billy and the gang member.